Forbidden Panel welcomes you to Panelcast, Forbidden Panel's weekly podcast featuring movie and comic news and reviews. And now, your hosts, AJ and Brian.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 68 of the Panelcast, a very special Halloween edition. This is AJ.
And this is Brian. And we're going to be bringing you some news stories as well as talking about our ZKS contest. Be discussing Halloween a little bit and probably bring you some reviews of video games and comics we've been reading, as well as our mildly well-received Zombie Versus discussion about zombies destroying other creatures.
Other so fictional we'll characters out in the universe right there. We liked it last year. We're going to do it.
It's basically us just nerding out.
Yeah, what else we got to do? It's a fucking geek podcast.
So we'll take a quick break and then be right back.
Hi, I'm a chick. And I read comic books and play video games. And yes, I am attractive. And whenever I need new information, I head over to Forbidden Panel and look for new geeks to seduce. And I'm
sorry. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Panelcast. This will be our new segment, which is basically us talking about stuff that we see on the internet and find funny or think we want to share it with you. Yeah. First up, on a I Swear I'm Not Gay trip, Michael Jackson's Thriller is becoming a 3D horror film. Several minor studios are in the process of bidding for the film, which is looking like it's going to be about $50 million. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. They're making a movie out of Thriller. As if Thriller wasn't a movie already.
Okay. Sure. Even it's Halloween, right?
Even in death, Michael Jackson's making the money. That's all I got to say.
He wasn't making any money in life.
Well, very true. Very true. On a musician that should be dead trip that we're going on so far, Disney executives are sweating it out right now because they've read Keith Richards' new book, and where he describes how drugs had attributed to his survival and, you know, how he was very meticulous and how much drugs he took and so on and so forth. So they're very concerned about his appearance in this last Pirates of the Caribbean movie that he was in. So they're considering just cutting out all of his scenes altogether and pretending like Keith Richards doesn't exist in the Pirates of the Caribbean world. Just because, you know, the man takes some drugs. Disney, yeah, dude, I think everybody on that set was high for the most part, so maybe the problem
is... being around Keith Richards probably gets you high.
You know, from what I understood, he was, like, wobbling back and forth so bad that they had to hold him. They had to hold his feet in place while they were filming. And come on, guys, this is Keith Richards. Really, you don't know how high he is?
They should have just, like, put some strings on him and moved him around like a marionette.
Yeah, probably. I think what the problem here is that he just went out and admitted it. Like, he became, you know, everybody knows he did drugs.
Yeah,
the fact that he came clean in this tell-all book, I think they're really concerned about it. But honestly, if there's somebody out there that doesn't know he does drugs, when they, you know, even just in life, much less when they watch the movie.
Just go back under your rock. It's okay.
Yeah, then something's wrong with you. So I think Disney's just going a little extreme. Like, come on, guys. We all know he does drugs. We all know he was high during the filming of the movie, and it's okay. We get it, you know. Removing him from the movie is just ridiculous at this point. There's no point.
Yeah, but it's a classic Disney move, so.
It is. It's so Disney. Brian?
Let's see. I got a story here that took me a little while to figure this one out. Because some of the stories are not very clear on what they were talking about, but it looks like there's more Lenore comics coming on the way. Probably not until January of next year, but Titan Books is going to be releasing Volume 2 of Lenore. For those people out there that don't know what it is, it's sort of like a cult surrealist horror comic about this little dead girl and all of the bizarre characters that she meets. And I would say, like, if you have any experience at all with the work of Jonen Vasquez, it's kind of a similar humor style to that, and just sort of strange and bizarre and violent. And but I actually tend to, I think I, at least in terms of personality wise, I like Roman Dirge more than I like Jenin Vasquez. So yeah.
I was letting you enjoy that long bit of silence there. moving on in the news, Warner Brothers opens up the Acme warehouse. Basically what that is Dark Horizons recently reported that Warner Brothers is trying to set up a new film, which would be a mix of live action and CGI, featuring many of the outlandish devices from the Acme company that you've seen in their cartoons. Pretty much anything Wile E. Coyote's ever used, you will see. The tone is set to be similar to the Men in Black or various Amblin features of the 1980s. It should be kind of cool. The problem is it will not feature the Looney Tunes characters, which I don't understand that. How are you going to have, you know, a movie based on a warehouse full of Acme toys that were, that Looney Tunes characters have used, and not show any of the Looney Tunes characters? That's just retarded. But, you know,
the whole idea sounds stupid.
You know what? It kind of does, but then it kind of doesn't. It's very, I don't know, there's a couple of warehouse movies that are out right now that are just kicking ass, like Warehouse 13, Indiana Jones, you know, stuff like that. So who knows? It might be kind of cool, but it might be retarded. They're still trying to do another Roger Rabbit, and that's where their problem lies, is that, you know, Disney never did Roger Rabbit, and they don't have anything as cool as that, so they've been trying for years to try and get something, you know, to be on the same playing field as that. So maybe this is their opportunity, but I don't know. We'll see what happens. And finally, in our news today, yeah, we don't have much news. How sad is that? In our final news bit of the day, the third Batman gets a new title. Again, Dark Horizons. Los Angeles Times talked to Christopher Nolan recently and confirmed that his third Batman film will be called The Dark Knight Rises. And while he won't reveal the villain of the film, he will confirm that it won't be the Riddler. He also says the studio has agreed that the film should, quote, resist the current 3D craze, unquote, and instead use high-definition approaches and IMAX cameras. In terms of other characters, Nolan says, we'll use many of the same characters that we have all along, and we'll be introducing some new ones. In other words, nothing unexpected. Rumors over at Movie Hole emerged earlier today that Nolan had reportedly been meeting with actresses all week to find the female lead. The interview makes no mention of it, however, or discuss what lead she will take. So, fortunately, no Riddler, which means, you know, all talk of Robin Williams or J. Gordon Levitt are out the window and have no substantiation here. But who knows, we could see something cool along the lines of, like, Killer Croc, or, I don't know. You know what? Arnold Schwarzenegger ruined Mr. Freeze for me, so I never want to see a Mr. Freeze character in any of these new Batmans. But I'd be down for, you know, again, Killer Croc, or even Penguin, or even the Black Mask. That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, but it seems like, you know, with these latest string of Batman movies, they've been trying to stay away from some of the more bizarre Batman characters.
Very true, but I think with the feel and the grit and everything, the way it looks, I think a good Killer Croc movie would be in the works. I mean, I think that would be awesome. You know, just because then it'll turn into like a horror movie with Batman just being in it. You know, I'd be down for that. So, for all those news bits and more, please check out our website. And, Brian, if you have nothing else, I'm going to go ahead and cut us into a break.
No, I think that's it.
Awesome. Then we'll be right back.
Forbidden Panel is currently looking for artists. If you or someone you know would like to join us, please visit www.forbiddenpanel.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Panelcast. This segment, we're going to talk about some of the comics and stuff that we've been doing or reading this week. Brian, what you got?
Well, the first one that I wanted to talk about is a comic that we've discussed on the show before called I Kill Giants, which I have actually not read. It's a 7-issue series that deals with essentially little girl who is kind of like a loner and lives in her own little fantasy world and obsessed with D&D and giants. So,
how'd you like it?
I really like this series a lot. I definitely am going to put it up there in my top 10 of comics. And for one very important reason, because it almost made me cry.
Almost?
Yeah. Well, when I was reading the last issue of this series, I had tears swimming in my eyes and like that tight feeling in your chest the whole time I was reading it. It was rough.
Yeah, it's a phenomenal series. For those of you that haven't picked it up yet, you should definitely read this book. It's written by Joe Kelly, art by Nomura. It's an amazing, amazing book. And it's, I don't know, Brian and I managed to discuss this off air before we got on here because I was curious about whether he liked it or not. And it's grounded fantasy. It starts off in this fantasy world that gets you involved with, especially like, for us, because we've been playing D&D for most of our lives, and we can relate to it in that aspect. I mean, granted, neither one of us are little girls, even though Brian looks like one.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of people out there probably would argue that I am a little girl.
Yeah, so I'm one of those people that will argue that, especially with that one night that we spent alone. It was magical. Anyway, so, yeah, you can relate to it in that aspect, and that, you know, you feel like a loner kid, and you're playing D&D a lot, and you're a child and in school and stuff like that, and you get, you know, ostracized for it or made fun of because of it, and that's what this book does. It draws you in that way, and then it fucks you up at the end. It's just not fair.
Yeah, yeah. The pacing of this story is really well done in terms of, you know, how much information gets revealed to you in, you know, as the story progresses. And for anybody, I mean, we've discussed this before, and so I don't think I'm really giving any spoilers. This comic was released a couple years ago. So essentially the whole point of this story is that the reason the little girl is living in her fantasy world is because she's dealing with her mother's cancer. Like, her mother has terminal cancer, and she doesn't really know how to handle that, so she has invented this fantasy world where if she can defeat these giants, you know, with the giants, which are essentially, I guess, her feelings about the whole thing, like, if she can defeat these giants, then her mother will get better.
Right, well, they're kind of fantasy manifestations of the cancer and her feelings toward the cancer.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
She's battling, and she's hoping to defeat them, and that if she does defeat them, then her mother will get better. Unfortunately, that doesn't happen.
I don't really even have the right words to describe, you know, experiencing this comic, because I don't know. It's something that really gets you on a really sort of basic emotional level. Like, there's not really any way to properly describe it. I'd say visceral, maybe.
Yeah, I'll go along with that. But it feels very never-ending story-ish. You know, or like there's this whole fantasy that the kid's creating, and delves himself into it just to take themselves out of the reality that they have to face. You know?
Yeah, there's a little bit of that in there.
And it's, I don't know. I think it's a phenomenal book. Joe Kelly did a great job. And when I interviewed him here on the show, when we went to WonderCon last year, I interviewed him and talked to him about it. And, you know, I was struck silent by when I asked him, I was like, you know, what was your inspiration behind the story? Why'd you write such a story? And he's like, well, I was trying to figure out a way to handle with the fact that my father was dying with cancer and dealing with that. You know, and at that point, I had nothing to say. I just wanted to give the guy a hug and be like, sorry, dude, I love you. You know?
Well, he captured it well, because, I mean, I've never personally experienced a situation like this, and I still felt it. You know, I mean, my own mother is still very much alive and well So, I don't know. I mean, I guess the way that it was written, I was able to relate it to other losses that I've experienced in my family. Mm-hmm. So even though it wasn't, I haven't dealt with this particular situation, just the way that he wrote it, it really brings, I don't know. I find myself at a loss for words sometimes when I'm describing the things that I'm reading, especially if it's something that I really like. It's just because it's hard to kind of capture how you feel about certain things.
Right.
And in this case, it's something like it struck me on this really basic level that very few comics ever do.
Right.
So yeah, this one definitely goes up in my top 10. And I mean, the art is phenomenal, especially towards the end when you start to see the giants and the titans specifically.
Right.
The design for that character was really well done, and I think it really perfectly kind of embodies what it was supposed to represent, both in terms of being a giant and in terms of being this sort of dark, oppressive figure that's kind of hanging over this little girl's life.
Yeah, it was definitely something different than we've had to experience here, you know, in reading the comics that we've read, but still, all the while, very, very well done. In fact, why don't we take this opportunity, and I'll play the interview that I got from him, from Joe Kelly, at WonderCon this year. So why don't we go ahead and do that, and we'll be right back.
Right, so I'm here with Joe Kelly, writer of I Kill Giants, correct?
Yes.
And as I said a couple minutes ago, I loved the book. I thought it was awesome. What was your inspiration behind writing the book?
Well, it was a very personal project. My dad had gotten sick with diabetes, and it was the first time I sort of had to be confronted with the possible mortality of a parent. I also had young children at the time, and started to think about what would it be like for my daughter, who is very precocious and had this great imagination, to deal with something kind of unthinkable at a young age.
Right.
And that was the beginning of the I Kill Giants.
Very powerful. I liked it a lot. The ending, like, threw me off. I was like, oh, crap. So I liked it a lot. Is there anything else you got going on for you?
Oh, sure. Well, I mean, I'm wrapping up some work on Spider-Man. The Grim Hunt is my arc, which is coming up in a couple of months. Definitely new books coming from Image. I'm getting caught up on Bad Dog and Four Eyes, which are not dead, I promise. They're coming out. Four Eyes is coming out first because that actually is finished. Bad Dog will be in a little bit longer time. That's my fault. And then I'm working on some more stuff, but I've been hesitant to talk about it only because I have been known to be late. So I'm trying to not talk about stuff until it's actually coming out. But Man of Action has a new show coming out. So we've got Generator X. It comes out on April 23rd. And if you like Men 10, that's the next level. It's a really, really cool show. It's actually based on a comic we did a while ago called M-Rex. And we're very excited about it.
Awesome. So other than the Image website, where can we find any more of your work at?
Well, manofaction.tv is our website. That's where you can get caught up on our news and that kind of stuff. I have a badly maintained blog, Joe Kelly versus the universe.com, and then I'm on Facebook also. So.
Okay, awesome. Well, thank you very much.
Sure, thank you. It's a pleasure.
And we're back, and you're just listening to the interview that AJ did with Joe Kelly. I'm still kind of at a loss to describe, you know, how I felt about the comic, but I think I've got it mostly. I got my point across.
Yeah, I mean, and if for you, those of you who haven't read it yet and are very interested in reading it, you can go to our website. If you're on our website right now, you'll notice on the left column or right column that a link to our Amazon store. If you click on that, you can go over and find I Kill Giants listed in there and pick it up for yourselves and see if you like it or not. And please let us know what you think about it, because, you know, we're very we'd like to have discussions about it and get different opinions on it and see if, you know, if we're all like-minded or not. So, Brian, what else have you read?
Well, I decided to follow up that happy little story with reading DMZ.
Which in itself is nowhere near being a happy story.
No, not at all. But you've been bothering me to read it for a long time, so I've read the first six issues, I think. I think it's five or six issues. I think six. But DMZ basically deals with this sort of fictional near future setting where I guess essentially, from what I've gathered in this series so far, this faction has sort of broken away from the United States and is trying to form essentially their own government, trying to start their own United States, I guess. And so it's essentially what's happened is it's erupted into this civil war where the main battlefront is taking place in New York, specifically in the demilitarized zone of Manhattan Island. And this story deals with a reporter, or I guess he's not a reporter. He was just supposed to be an aide that kind of got thrust into the role of a reporter, traveling around and basically doing stories about the people that are living on Manhattan Island and that are kind of stuck there, you know, forced to defend themselves from not only the United States, but also the other faction, which I don't remember what they're called, if you can recall that.
I think they're like the New Patriots or something like that.
Something like that, yeah. Some kind of name. But essentially, the people that, there's a bunch of just different kind of like clans or tribes of people that are living on Manhattan Island that are really just caught in the middle of everything.
Hey, so he decides to become the liaison between all the different factions as well,
yeah,
as playing both sides of the fence. Not really playing it, but, you know, reporting it. And that's what he ends up doing. He travels to different sections of the DMZ of Manhattan Island, reporting on how they're living and how, you know, they're getting along with life being ostracized from America.
Mm-hmm.
So, we have stated many times on the show how much we hate politics.
Right.
I will even go as far as saying that if you talk politics around me, I will shoot you. But this book is not super political, but it's good. You know, it shows you both sides of the fence, all sides of the fence, actually, and it's, I don't know.
Yeah,
man,
I think that's one of the reasons why I like it, is because there's no overt political agenda being pushed with it in terms of any particular thing. It's just showing, you know, the reality of the situation and, you know, how everybody has got their own viewpoints about what's going on, you know, especially in terms of war and combat situations. Like, there's really no clear-cut, you know, well-defined sides when it comes to things. So it's, you know, there's always shades.
Right.
And I think this comic really is kind of capturing that pretty well.
Yeah, no, it gets deeper and deeper and deeper. And one of my favorite things about this comic book is it's got the best zero issue I've ever read. And it's not even a zero issue. It's like around issue 14 or something like that you'll come across. And it's basically,
is this like a bonus issue?
No, it's an actual issue. It's just, instead of a story or anything that takes place, it shows you, it's like it comes off like a pamphlet, like a tour guide pamphlet that you would pick up at a hotel about the surrounding areas. And that's how it comes across. It shows you the different sections of Manhattan Island, what they offer. It's even got sample menus from restaurants in Manhattan Island and where they're getting food at and stuff like that. So it doesn't really focus on a story so much as it brings you, hey,
just like background information.
Right. Here's life on the island so far, you know, and it's got one of the best zero issues I've ever seen in my life. And I really respect that. And the fact that he brings it around issue 14 in the middle of everything is a nice little break in all the seriousness that is contained within this book. This book is, you know, completely awesome. I love this book. But it's one of those books where you can only read one story arc at a time, much like The Walking Dead, where I can't stand reading it month to month to month because I can't handle the wait period in between. So I like to read it, you know, after the story arc has been completed, then I'll pick it up
right,
and read them all. And so this one, that's what this book does. And, you know, issue 14, again, I'm guessing, I can't remember exactly which issue it is, but issue 14 is kind of a zero issue in that it takes a break from all the madness that's going on and lets you know the silly side of things, but in a zero issue type aspect. So, yeah, I really dig it.
Yeah, DMZ is that's probably going to end up being up there as, you know, among my current favorites. So I've got a ways to catch up.
You do, and I can't wait till you catch up because I'm very curious as to what your opinions on it will be.
My opinion right now is that it's definitely a very. I'd have to say I think one of the things that I like about it the most is that it just, you know, it seems to be very grounded in reality, and there's a lot of things in the comic that really sort of parallel, you know, things that have been happening in the last decade.
Right.
So it's a very familiar type of story, even though it's, you know, it's, I think this is supposed to be in a near future setting because they have some technology that we don't have, but there's nothing that's really
overtly.
Yeah. There's no over the top, like, ridiculousness with it. It seems very much a story of the now.
Right. Maybe 5 years in the future, you know, something like that.
Right.
It's just a future that isn't right now.
And, right.
Yeah, so. Well, good. I'm glad you're digging it, and I look forward to hearing what you think about the rest of the series. Your next book should be Ex Machina. I'm going to put that out there right now. Put it on record. Everybody can hear this. Ex Machina should be your next book.
I think we've probably got at least 7 other episodes where you've told me that, too, so.
I'm going to continue to do it after you read DMZ Ex Machina. God damn it.
All right, we'll see.
So, all right, well, that's all you have for this segment, right?
Yeah.
Awesome. We'll take a quick break, and when we come back, I'll talk some video games.
Greetings, Forbidden Panelites. This is Benjamin Gleibert, Director of Publishing for Symantec, San Diego's premium comic book publisher and home of Mythoi and the webcomic The Undergrounds. Check us out online at Symantec.com. That's Symantec.com. For now, enjoy your geeky gurus, AJ and Brian. Symantec Publishing. Find the meaning in print.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. So, AJ. Been playing some video games, huh?
You could say that. You could also say that I have no social life and have decided to hold myself in the closet and video game.
I would say that, but then I would have to say that about myself as well.
Well, yeah. So, yeah, shamefully, I have not had a chance to read any comic books this week. I got slammed at work, didn't really have much time to do much of anything other than work, and when I did have a few minutes, I decided to try and play some video games.
I think that's the most true answer there.
Yeah, yeah. I've been playing the new Medal of Honor. For those of you familiar with the series, it came out back in the 90s for the PS1 and the PS2. It's a first-person shooter that mostly focused on Vietnam or World War II type era. Well, this new Medal of Honor is just called Medal of Honor, and it's brought up to date in the modern times.
A modern setting, or
yeah, like a modern graphics. Setting, like you're in Afghanistan.
Oh, okay.
You know, fighting the ground war or whatever with the guerrillas that are existing there. You even get to deal with some of the retrainings. You know how American troops are retraining Afghanistani troops to fight in their style.
Mm-hmm.
With our current weapons and so forth. That's some of the things that you deal with in this game. Now, as with most multiplayer games, I like to play through the campaign mode, the story mode, first, so I can get to know the button layouts, the configuration, stuff like that, the gameplay, things like that. So when I do jump into the multiplayer, I'm not getting owned left and right, you know. I actually stand a fighting chance until my skills come out and I destroy everything in my path. So, I've decided to go ahead and try the single player with this. Very disappointed, actually. It's not that it's a horrible game, and it's not that the gameplay is bad. The button layout and configuration is very similar to Call of Duty Modern Warfare 1 and 2. The graphics, though, take a step back from those. They're very polygonal and blocky and not too impressive.
It's kind of disappointing for a PS3.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it feels like they're not taking full advantage of the PS3 game engine and graphics system that is involved with it. But, yeah, it's and it plays just like Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2. Storyline, everything, mission control, the whole nine. I'm reminded very much of the Ghost Recon Advanced Warfighter 2 game, where, you know, it's just, yeah, it's just point and shoot, and you're just running for cover. Simple little missions, nothing too exciting, and very short from my understanding. I'm only about 4 or 5 missions in, and what I understand is only a 10-mission game, and takes 6 hours to complete, which is kind of a letdown. But again, most games nowadays are focusing more on the multiplayer than they are for the single player, such as, Battlefield 2, Call of Duty, you know, Killzones, those games. You know, they're very small campaign mode, but very huge multiplayer mode. Now, the good thing about it is it seems like getting the trophies are very simple. A lot of it just has to do with completing the missions or playing for a certain amount of time. Including, there's a lot of multiplayer trophies that you can obtain through the game as well. And to have any type of longevity, you're going to want to try and achieve these, you know, trophies throughout the game. Unlike Modern Warfare 2, where I play that game every single day, because I'm just addicted like that, and I'm just that good, this game doesn't seem to hold any longevity for me. Again, I haven't played any multiplayer games yet, so I don't know my whole viewpoint and aspect on it could change once I do. But right now, the single player, I'm not that impressed, and it just feels like an additional map pack or a new DLC that they released for, you know, Call of Duty. So, yeah. I would wait until next week once I get the multiplayer down to let you know whether or not to pick up this game. But right now, I would not rush out the door to pick it up. But I would be rushing out the door to get... Go ahead, Brian, sorry.
It seems kind of disappointing that they're making these games, you know, these FPS, especially it seems with the console FPS games really kind of suffer from this, where they just focus on doing multiplayer, and then the single-player game just kind of gets tacked on as an extra, and I don't know. It's almost seems like it's just a waste of money. Why not just have one FPS game and then just release upgrade packs for it?
You know, and that's what I loved about Battlefield 2, the PC game when it came out, was that it was an amazing game when it first came out, and then they kept releasing DLC after DLC after DLC, and it just made the game even better. And they released it in such a timely fashion. It was like every 2 months they would release one, and they were only $10. And you get like 2 new map packs and a whole bunch of new weapons and vehicles and stuff like that. And it kept you interested in the game. I played that game for well over a year, you know, just on multiplayer alone. And it's the same with Modern Warfare 2, where I've been playing this game for well over a year as well, because of the new DLC that they come out and the new challenges and all that stuff that keeps coming out. And, you know, I think what they realized was that replayability in video games nowadays is so low. Like, not everything can be an Uncharted 2 or a God of War, you know, so they release it in a multiplayer aspect so that you can keep playing the game and they can keep money off of that franchise, making money off of that franchise.
Well, not even necessarily anything with the replayability, but just it always seems like the single player mode for a lot of these FPS games is just kind of gimped. Like they don't bother with it. Like they just kind of put it in there as an afterthought.
Well, except for Call of Duty 2, man, that single player campaign is fucking intense and epic. Man, I replay that all the time, and each time I'm afraid to replay it because I just don't want to get that emotionally attached into a video game or get that fucked up over it, you know.
Right.
But yeah, all these other games are other titles are the same way. Yeah, it's I don't understand why they don't put as much effort into the single player as they do into the multiplayer. And I think that's just plain laziness at that point, you know. But we'll see. The new Call of Duty is coming out in 2 weeks, called Black Ops, and I'm very interested in that game. I can't wait to play, and I know a lot of my friends are the same way. But on a side note, what I may also get sidetracked by playing is the new Star Wars Force Unleashed 2. I talked about the demo in last week's panel cast, and the game came out this week, yesterday actually, and I have my copy sitting here staring at me lovingly. And I can't wait to dig into that, but I told myself I wouldn't do so until I was done with the Medal of Honor single player, so maybe I'll be able to talk more about it on the next episode, or maybe 2 episodes, or even if we can record a next episode, because I may be too busy playing it until Brian to fuck off, because I'm playing and chopping things off. Chopping people's
heads. Yeah, well, you tell me to fuck off anyway, so.
Yeah, well, you know, but this time I'll be serious.
All right, well, why don't we take a quick break here, and then we'll be right back.
This is Brian of the Forbidden Panel Podcast. I just want to invite you to listen to my companion podcast, The Geek Girls, featuring one-on-one interviews with geeky ladies. Look for Geek Girls on ForbiddenPanel.com.
And welcome back to Panelcast. I think I'll just talk like this for the rest of the show. Okay. So, we're going to talk about Halloween stuff now. Okay?
Sure.
Okay. Now, that's getting annoying.
Yeah.
It's Halloween, people. Halloween's coming up this weekend. A couple things we wanted to remind you guys about. First off, being the Long Beach Comic Con, which is coming up this weekend. I will be out there on Sunday at the Draw Hard booth.
I'll be there in spirit.
No, you won't. So come on out and see me and John Narcomi from Draw Hard Studios. We'll be having the latest issue of ZKS, the ZKS Spotlight on Kayla, that we did for 24-Hour Comic Book Day. Excuse me. So come on out and check it out. We also have the ZKS contest going on at Horror Night at the Fox Theater in Redlands, California, where you can come dressed up as your favorite ZKS member or zombie and have your likeness drawn into a comic book. All in time for Halloween. Brian, we're going to take this segment and talk about our favorite Halloween moments.
Okay.
What was your favorite Halloween moment?
I'd say it was probably the part where they set Michael Myers on fire.
Oh.
Oh, wait, is that not the Halloween moments we're talking about?
No, but okay.
That's a pretty tough one. I don't know. I've had a lot of, like, Halloweens that have varied from awful to I don't remember because I was pretty drunk. So I would say probably some of those. I mean, I've had a lot of, like, really, really good Halloween parties that are fun, you know, hanging out with a bunch of people that I at least got along with fairly well.
How often do you get dressed up every Halloween?
No, I don't know. It depends. If I have something to do on Halloween, I will. But a lot of Halloweens I've had where I just sit at home and pass out candy. Or just shut off the lights and ignore the doorbell.
We are the most uninteresting people to follow on Halloween, I swear. I stopped partying Halloween very, very long time ago for personal reasons. But, you know, I normally sit at the door to hand out candy. And in my complex, nobody trick-or-treats. So we really get nobody showing up at the door. And my girlfriend ends up yelling at me for wasting money on candy. And she ends up eating it all.
But then it's not wasted.
It's not wasted, no. But I get the grief from it. Like, I'm gaining weight because of you, you asshole. Type of thing,
yeah.
You know.
Well, I think that's a lot of it is some of the areas that I've lived, like, nobody really comes by. So, you know, and then the apartment that I lived in when I was still in California, we never had kids come by there. So,
well, the apartment you lived in wasn't exactly the safest neighborhood in the world.
No, it wasn't. So it was probably a good idea that kids weren't out in that area. But, yeah, so, I mean, you know, I was there for about 4 or 5 years, so I just kind of got used to not really doing anything for Halloween. But I have dressed up. I mean, there's a couple times I've, like, gone and just hung out with some, you know, a couple friends. And you just sit around and, you know, have a few beers and just, you know, nice mellow night. I haven't really done, like, any kind of crazy Halloween party in probably, like, 7 years.
Yeah, I don't remember the last time I got dressed up for Halloween, to be honest with you. Even this Halloween, I'm not going to be getting dressed up. I'll be too busy running around doing crazy stuff for the contest and for Long Beach Comic Con and so forth. And so, yeah. And then my son is running around. He's going to, like, some parties and stuff like that, too. So, though he is going to be dressed like a zombie, which is a bonus point. No influence there from me, I swear, at all.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, not like I'll get a zombie book or anything.
I've been considering dressing up for Halloween this year. I'm still trying to decide what I want to do. A friend of mine was thinking about doing, like, a sort of a little small get-together with an 80s theme. So, trying to decide which 80s pop star I want to be.
You should be Rick Astley.
Yeah. I should.
And then you could Rickroll everybody at the party.
That's actually probably a pretty good idea.
Just walk in. Never gonna give you a... Never gonna let you. Yeah, that's all the words I know. Yeah, so Halloween isn't all that great of a deal. I mean, you would think it would be, considering we're a comic book website and we write a zombie comic book. But I know I personally get off on the fact that other people dress up. You know, I like seeing other people's costumes and stuff. And my favorite part about Halloween is the pumpkin art, you know?
Yeah, I think that's probably my favorite part of Halloween. It's just carving the pumpkin.
Yeah.
And I always try to do something different. You know, I try to avoid buying the little patterns and stuff. Like, I'll use a picture as a guide, but I try not to do the patterns. Usually what I'll do is I'll just draw, like get a pencil and just kind of draw on the pumpkin what I'm going to do and then go from there.
You did a phenomenal job on last year's pumpkin. The ZKS pumpkin was the shit. I have it as my icon on Facebook right now.
Yeah, I was just noticing that. Yeah, that was... I had a little bit of trouble in doing some of the finer details, so I had to just kind of make like the shotguns just big white sections. But yeah, it came out pretty well. I think it's just the pumpkin that I had, the rind was really thick for what I was trying to do on it, so parts of it you couldn't really see through that well. But overall, I'd say it came out well.
Yeah, I dug it. It looks awesome. And with the way that... some of the pumpkin art is coming out nowadays, man. There's just phenomenal detail on a lot of this stuff. And I like I like to go around at night, walk around, and check out all the pumpkin art that's going on and stuff. So that's my favorite part of Halloween right now. And, I love when we do get trick-or-treaters. I love when the kids come up and you hand out candy and stuff. And maybe it's because I'm older, but I don't know. It's just a sense of appreciation watching the kids enjoying themselves, you know. It's just, it makes me feel good. Except for the douchebags, at which point I just bring out my big sword or my bat lift and scare the fuck out of them. but we really don't get a lot of trick-or-treaters in my neighborhood. So this year, after the Long Beach Comic Con, I'll be going over to my friend Janelle, who is a writer on the site. I'll be going over to her house. She just bought a new house and lives in a nice, friendly neighborhood. And hopefully see some kids running around trick-or-treating then. So maybe I'll get my fix in that way. But we'll see what happens in that aspect. So in the tradition that we've set here last year with Halloween, we're going to talk about zombies versus. What that is, if for those of you who weren't around last year, what we're going to do is pair up zombies versus fictional characters and, debate on how well they would do against these characters. Last year we had discussions about zombies versus aliens, zombies versus Jason Voorhees, Hellraiser, and so forth. So this year, we're going to talk about some of the things that they've... some of the famous people that have... famous characters that have come out in this year's movies. So, Brian. Zombies versus the Na'vi. Go.
The Na'vi? Well, are we talking like zombie Na'vi, or are we talking just like regular zombies?
Ah, good point. Let's say they're... Well, I mean, it doesn't really matter, does it? I mean, they're not going to act like the Na'vi once they're undead.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I guess it's going to depend on what type of zombieism we're talking about here. Like, I mean, would they be able to contract it? Like, would they be able... If they got bitten by a human zombie, would they become a zombie?
Okay, we'll put them in the ZKS world, where they're runners, they're all kinds of zombies from all different types of genres, and you can contract it in any way, shape, or form. You're a runner once you get first bitten, but once your body finally dies, you're a creeper.
Well, I mean, they were pretty mortal for them for the most part, I'd say. I mean, because they weren't able, they're at least four times as big as us, and humans, for the most part, were still able to fuck them up pretty bad. So I'd say zombies would probably have a pretty good chance.
I will agree with you on that point. I think the Na'vi would take forever to figure out that they needed headshots or to destroy the brain, and would probably have a problem decimating the zombie apocalypse if it happened. But their use of flying animals and you know, just animals, jungle animals in general, I think would give them somewhat of an upper hand. I think they would be able to survive for a long time but just based on that. And the fact that they live up in the trees, you know, zombies can't really crawl up trees.
Yeah, I mean, they have access to, like, those floating mountains and shit, so I guess that probably would be a big advantage for them.
Right. That's my viewpoint on it. All right, so, I don't know. You say zombies, I say draw. I say it would be a draw.
Yeah, I say zombies.
Okay. Zombies versus...
It's mostly because I want zombies to destroy everybody anyway, but...
Yeah, well, we know your feelings on that, you sick bastard. Zombies versus the little girl from Let the Right One In.
I've actually have not seen that movie, so I don't have any comments on it.
Okay. She's basically a vampire, and since Bobby Crosby has changed my whole zombie outlook, in that I believe that zombies are actually starving vampires, I think that it wouldn't matter since she's already a vampire. Let's see, zombies versus what's come? John Connor. Zombies versus John Connor.
Are we talking, like, which John Connor are we talking about?
We're talking Christian Bale John Connor.
Okay. Fuck yeah, he would fuck them all up.
You don't think he would get bit?
No, he's Christian Bale.
I think he would spend too much time yelling at the zombies for walking into a scene than getting killed.
Yeah, but they would still die.
True. So, John Connor, we're both on agreement on that one. I think John Connor would kick some ass. probably because his mom would warn him.
Yeah.
man. Okay, speaking about Christian Bale, zombies versus Batman.
Bale's Batman. If it's Christian Bale's Batman, then I'll give it to Batman.
Okay. Zombies are not faring well in this conversation here. Zombies versus Heath Ledger's Joker.
I want to make a joke here, but I'm not sure if I should.
Considering Heath Ledger's already dead, might come back as a zombie? Is that the joke you're going to make?
Yeah, I'm like, well, he's kind of already halfway there, so.
So what is it? What's your verdict?
That's a tough one, because in my head, like, as far as just the Joker goes, I could see the Joker intentionally infecting himself with zombieism for shits and giggles, so... I would say that at some point that Joker would become a zombie, but does that necessarily mean that the zombies win? I don't know.
You see, I'm of the opinion that Joker would just modify his virus already, his laughing gas, to where they're laughing and undead. Because that would be creepy as all shit. You know? And he would be lord of the zombies, but I don't think he would be stupid enough to infect himself.
I don't know. I guess maybe. I mean, it just... Like, based on the character, it seems like if he thought that turning himself into a zombie would somehow do something against Batman, I could see him doing it.
I don't know. I think he'd be more apt to turn Batman into a zombie than he would try to use it to get an upper hand for himself. I mean, at the end of the day, Joker is self-preserving. You know, as crazy and nutty as he is, he doesn't, you know, he doesn't want to die until he's done with Batman. And, yeah, I mean, he hasn't turned himself into a vampire yet to beat Batman, so why would he do so with a zombie?
Because vampires are gay.
Very true. Very, very true. You know what, we'll continue this discussion when we come back, but we need to take a quick break, so we'll be right back.
Hi, this is Justin White of Necrosapien Press and artist of ZKS, the Zombie Kill Squad. And you should come check out ForbiddenPanel.com for all your latest geek needs.
And we're back. And I think I won that last one, so let's move on.
Well, I don't think there's a victor. I mean, we're not, like, trying sides. We're trying to figure out who would win.
In my head, I won.
You fail at the game of life.
Yes, or do I win? At the game of life. I've actually never played that game, so I don't know.
Well, yeah. I think in that last discussion, nobody really won because we couldn't figure out who would win against the Joker.
Joker's too crazy to really kind of come up with any sort of
he's
reasonable hypothesis about what he would do.
He's too chaotic to I don't know, to factor into a zombie apocalypse. I think, though, that Joker would win. Or survive, at least, and that makes a win.
Yeah, I think he could definitely survive. He's crazy enough to do it.
So, moving forward, zombies versus the Watchmen.
At least some of the Watchmen would definitely fall. But I think ultimately, you know, Dr. Manhattan wouldn't really have to worry about it. He could just destroy all the zombies at a whim if he wanted to.
I think that Dr. Manhattan would be like, well, fuck all y'all, I'm out of here, I'm going back to Mars.
Or that could happen too, you know.
And the rest of them would be too busy bitching at each other to realize that they're being bitten and turning into the undead.
I think that Rorschach probably... he has kind of a little bit of the Joker syndrome going on, so I think he would be crazy enough to survive.
Yeah, yeah. No, no, because he was overtaken very easily by a gang of cops. So I think in a horde of zombies come running after him, he may put up a good fight initially, but at the end of the day, he has no real superpowers. So he'd be overtaken by a mob easily. So I'm going to vote zombies on this one.
Yeah, I'll throw in zombies. Throw this one to zombies with the caveat of Dr. Manhattan.
Right. If Dr. Manhattan were still in Mars, then zombies win.
Yeah.
Now I know you're going to like this next one. Zombies versus the entire cast of Twilight.
We don't even need to discuss this one, so let's move on to the next one.
Now, come on. Are you Team Jacob or Team Undead? Which one are you going?
Of course I'm Team Undead. Zombies would kill every motherfucker on that show.
I have to agree. Though I think Kristen Stewart is already a zombie.
Yeah, that's true.
So, who knows?
I've seen her acting in a couple movies, and yeah, I'd have to say that she very well could be.
As protective as the entire cast or entire roster of the Twilight films and books are, I think they would go to try and protect fucking Bella, and in their craziness to destroy everything, they would not realize that you need to destroy the heads and would eventually be turned into zombies, so...
Well, if we were letting Stephanie Meyer write a fucking zombie story, then who knows how that would turn out.
Right.
But real zombies against the characters in Twilight, they fucking die.
Yeah.
All of them.
And they're not glitter zombies either.
Right. No, we're talking fucking eat your flesh zombies.
We're talking 28 Days Later zombies fucking up the whole cast of Twilight. So yeah, Team Undead for me.
Yes, of course.
Man, I can't think of anybody else. Zombies versus Tony Stark.
I think he'd do okay at first, but he would ultimately fall.
You think so?
He's too cocky. Look at how much shit the guy gets himself into just because he's such a cocky asshole.
I don't know. That suit of armor would protect him for a very long time.
Yeah, but he doesn't always have the armor on.
True. True. I think what would happen would be that he puts up a good fight, but randomly one night while he's getting drunk and not paying attention, a zombie creeps up and bites the shit out of him.
Yeah, I could see that happening.
I think in that scenario, it's zombies. Zombies win that one.
Or he'd get cocky and get stuck somewhere without his suit or, you know, some damn thing.
Right, or he's banging Black Widow and he gets bit on the ass.
Yeah.
So zombies. Zombies on that one.
If I was going to go, that's how I'd want to go.
Having a zombie bite you on your ass?
While I'm having sex.
You're like, oh, there's a slight sting.
Yeah, it's kind of kinky.
Okay, I'm all out of ideas. What do you got?
I don't know. Zombies versus Blue Water?
They're already undead anyway.
Yeah, I think their Blue Water might take that one because I think all of their fans are zombies.
Yeah, definitely. Who knows? Blue Water could be like the Masonites of the world now, the comic book industry. In fact, I think that's what's happening.
Who knows? I don't know. I'm making myself angry just thinking about Blue Water.
That is our Blue Water segment for this episode. Okay. Okay. One last one. Zombies versus all the geeks at San Diego Comic-Con.
Zombies.
Yeah?
Zombies, they're dead. They can't smell, so they wouldn't have any problem with the geeks at Comic-Con.
I think the zombies would do a great job of infiltrating the geeks at Comic-Con, because you can't really tell the difference for the most part. I mean, they're all...
Especially when they have their zombie walk thing.
Right. Yeah. I mean, they're all on a mindless mission anyway. They're all like, just, must get Twilight autograph.
And everybody's so densely packed into that area that, yeah. I mean, you couldn't really run, and then most of those people can't run anyway.
Right. So, yeah.
It'd be a fucking smorgasbord for the zombies.
Definitely zombies on that aspect. So, it looks like zombies are the winner of this discussion for this year, once again.
Zombies fuck you up.
Yep. Zombies versus the ZKS.
Well, of course the ZKS is going to win.
Are they? Are they really, Brian?
Well, everyone will just have to stay tuned to find out, won't they?
Uh-huh. Great lead-in right there. So... Well, all right, like we said, zombies win this discussion for this year. We'll check it out next year and see where we are then. If you have any viewpoints or you want to add to it, please feel free to post on the message board or post on the Facebook or post somewhere. Post something somewhere and tell us what you think about the zombies versus ideas. Or if you have any, zombies versus characters that you want to incorporate into it as well. I think that's going to wrap it up for this week. Brian, what do you think?
Yeah, I think we've talked about everything that we've had.
Yeah.
Yes. We don't really have any new developments, at least as far as I know, for ZKS or Forbidden Panel.
No, Forbidden Panel's still going on strong. ZKS is going to be awesome. We have a lot of new stuff coming out. Rancid Visions, which is the pinup contest book, will be coming out here at the beginning of November. I know I originally said October, but I'm broke. It'll be coming out here in November, so you'll have your chance to pick those up at the Rose Bowl Comic Book and Collector Show, as well as any of the random conventions that we're at, and the website. ZKS Spotlight Kayla, which is a 24-hour comic book that we did last year, will be premiering exclusively at the Fox Horror Night, coming up October 29th, Friday at 6 p.m. Your opportunity to dress like a zombie and be drawn into a comic book presents itself at that time. And you'll be able to pick up copies of the comic book there, as well as at the Long Beach Convention on Sunday. Please visit all of our sites. Facebook, Twitter, MySpace, the websites themselves. Visit all of our friends. Harass Brian. Make him finish reading DMZ. That'll be awesome. Please send us any and all feedback to aj@forbiddenpanel.com or brian@forbiddenpanel.com or aj@zombiekillsquad.net or brian@zombiekillsquad.net. Brian, if you have nothing else to add.
I think we can wrap this one up.
Awesome. Then I will say goodbye to you guys. We hope you have a safe and wonderful Halloween, and we will catch you all next week on the Panelcast.
Panelcast is brought to you by Forbidden Panel. Please visit us at www.forbiddenpanel.com.